What is up, AfterBuzzers? Welcome back to another episode of Scientology and the Aftermath. Today we're going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 9, Buying a City. We'll be discussing Clearwater, Florida, getting some more of Leah and Mike's personal stories, and a watershed legal moment for the organization. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Didn't they know?
They did. They kind of took over the city.
Yeah. But and it wasn't rock and roll because I think people would have liked that. It wouldn't be deserted right now. But they built the city, though.
They built it to what they wanted it to be. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Scientology in the Aftermath. As always, I'm your host, Taylor Gates. I'm joined by my rock star panelist.
Okay, rock star. I'm Jackie Ray, you guys. I'm building the city with Taylor tonight.
Yeah, we are. Like I kind of teased beforehand, we're going to be talking a lot about Clearwater, Florida. And we got some more of Lee and Mike's personal stories as well, which I found really interesting. I always find it really interesting when they kind of talk about what happened to them, because they usually kind of do the interviewing, and so it's really interesting when they come to the forefront. What did you think of this episode as a whole?
I loved this episode. I thought it was I loved the teaser at the end. I loved how we're going to even get more about this city. I thought it was just really interesting. My favorite part, though, was really kind of getting that emotion out of Leah. We've seen her give it with everyone else. You know, of course, she empathizes, but to actually kind of share a story from her childhood, I thought that was great. I'm really excited.
I agree. Well, let's just start off right there, because that's kind of where they, you know, sort of introed us in the episode and made it have such an impactful beginning this time. So yeah, we kind of get a little bit about Leah's personal story. And I know she's written books and done, you know, a lot of interviews. But on this show, you know, she's usually spotlighting other people. And she kind of gives us a peek into how she actually got involved in all of that. So she said that she had a pretty normal childhood with her mom and her sister. And it was her mom and Dennis, who was her stepfather, I believe, mm-hmm. that actually mm-hmm. sort of discovered Scientology and sort of brought them, you know, sort of into it. And so she was living in a dorm with a bunch of other girls, and her mom was in this really kind of dingy motel, and her stepfather was supposed to join them and never actually did. And so they only really had the Sea Org to rely on, and that kind of became their family just because they didn't really have anyone else. Were you surprised that this is kind of how she got involved? Or, like, did you know the story before this episode?
I knew that it was her stepdad that kind of facilitated them being Scientologists. I didn't know that he kind of deserted them, so that was kind of heartbreaking. But, you know, for me, one of the things that always gets me is trying to understand, because I don't have kids, I'm an amazing godmother, though, just fun fact. But so I would never, in that aspect, even a random stranger, Leah said that it was a roach infested motel, it had rats in it. So just trying to understand that mindset that says, hey, not only am I going to bring my kids into this environment, I'm going to let you separate us. So I'm not even with my kids while they're like, I just don't understand that mindset. It's a trip to me.
I think that the fact that they say, oh, this is for the good of the world, that you're going to be helping so much, it's going to help them be formed into the better people, you're going to be a better parent because of it. I think because they have it under this guise of, in the long run, it's going to be better for everyone. It might be painful right now, but this is something that's going to improve, you know, your life and the world in the long run. I think that's where they get you, because it's like, parents do usually just want the best for their kids. And so if they're kind of thinking towards the future, I think that's where they kind of put people in.
Because if you say, I want my kid to go to college and have a good job and be successful, if your kid comes home with straight F's, that is not on the lines of what you're saying. So if you're saying, oh, I want my kid to be a part of what's changing the world, where's the evidence? You know what I mean? I just don't know how you rationalize that.
That's a good point. But like we have talked about, Scientology is so good at marketing, and they're so good at presenting themselves in such a way that, like, look at all these buildings we have. Like, we are doing so much good. Like, look at the people working on the side of the street. Even though, you know, we've learned they have no proper training, they have no proper equipment, but they're just good at twisting things and making them seem like, oh, look how much good they're doing. You know what I mean? Because so many people have been duped into this. Like, it's just they have this sort of these tactics that have been proven to work so well.
Mm-hmm. It still, you know, it boggles my mind. And I was really, you know, for a different reason, because I lost my dad a few years ago. And so just the thought of being in a situation like that without, I mean, I know it wasn't her biological dad, but it was her stepdad. And just, you can see that that's still playing a part in her life even today, to know that they went and he's supposed to be selling off all the furniture. And then just, because, you know, and I don't mean to laugh, but there's a side of me that kind of knows what happens. You know, I feel like he was in that moment where he was selling off the furniture and he's like, what the hell am I? I'm not, sorry, kids. I can't do it. I'm not going to be locked away like that. And that's unfortunate, because you would hope that if he had that light bulb go off, which I really think it did, that you go and rescue them. But then at the same time, we don't know what her mom's mindset was either.
Exactly. It is just so sad, because she admits, she said, this is a big part of what sort of destroyed parts of my family in ways. And I found it so sad that she found it almost hard to be in that, you know, that city even today, because she would see families on the beach having fun and eating lunch together. And she knows that there are still people in this organization depriving themselves of all this and being separated and all this pain is being caused. And I believe it would be super hard to go back there too, even all these years removed, because it's such a deep scar that it hasn't healed yet.
Right.
It's just, ugh, it's just so sad when you actually think about it. It's almost eerie in a way.
Yeah, especially since it looked like a ghost town anyway. So there's no, it would be easier to go back if there was change, if there was life, if it looked slightly different. You'd be able to say, hey, you know what? It's gotten better here. And then you could maybe heal from that moment in time. But it's frozen in time, so exactly. You can't really move past that.
I also found it really interesting how she was talking about when she was a kid, people used to yell that she was in a cult and all this stuff. And she would be like, I don't understand, like, we're doing this for good reasons. And now she's on the other side of it. That's crazy to think about for me, because she really had to have done a complete 180, like being so firmly rooted in these beliefs that you can't even imagine that side of it, to being like knowing the consequences and like being brave enough to actually see the damage that it's doing.
Mm-hmm. Very brave of her.
Yeah, absolutely.
From the live chat, I want to say hi and Saipan to Polly. We've got one person. We've got two people. There's another person in there. Saipan is far, far away. And luckily, there's no Church of Scientology on the island of Saipan.
Interesting, because they did talk about a little bit, you know, here. We'll get into the history of it. We can actually do that right now. Let's just get into the history of it a little bit. But so Scientology did kind of start out internationally. And in the 70s, they decided that we have to take this to the U.S. I believe they said because Ron Hubbard needed a certain medical care that...
Yeah, he was dying, basically. They kind of did, even on this show, they did a good job of saying he was very, very ill. He was dying. Yeah. And he needed to be on the land.
So it's very convenient that they decided to come to the U.S. to, you know, this is what they were meant to come here, when really he just needed medical help, probably. But so that was in roughly the 70s. And so they, yes, moved the operation to the U.S. to get health care. And then they started talking about what the, you know, town was sort of like back then. And I guess I'm not super familiar with like the area of Clearwater, but they moved themselves into a hotel and kind of that had that be their base. Were you surprised that they chose that as their base?
No, because you need the space, and you know, you needed all the people that were on the Apollo, which is the boat that they were on. I did find it interesting to know that they did try to come landside or stateside or whatever the term is earlier, several years earlier, but they didn't, because every federal agency was waiting for L. Ron Hubbard. So it goes back to, I mean, they hadn't really built up the traction at that point. They were starting to, but they hadn't built up the traction. I think that them landing in Clearwater was kind of the start of their really kind of gaining their power. And, you know, and it's, again, I know I say this every week, but it's genius, because you settle in on a town that ultimately is going bankrupt. The bank was going bankrupt, so that's why they bought that building. The hotel was bankrupt, so that's why they got that building. You can literally come in, and people who are in those type of situations are like, yes, here, take it, because they need the money. So that would be interesting to know some of the other towns that they kind of visited, you know, around that area. But it was an easy strike. It was a clear and easy target, and they took it. And no one was in a financial position to fight back.
Absolutely. And just kind of speaking of that, I want to touch on the fact that they really took advantage of this place even after they had been set up there and kind of were wanting to go even more aggressive and get even more involved. A big thing was wanting to buy that aquarium. And because it was so, like, situated in such a position that they kind of needed that, they didn't want anything sort of competing with it. Because they have all this money and all this power, they were like, listen, we will honestly, like, redesign the entire downtown area, make it look nicer and make it more of, like, a lucrative place. If you just let us buy this for, like, an absurd amount of money for what it was. And one guy, we had a lot of people sort of, you know, kind of standing up and fighting against them. And this particular man was David Yates, who did not want to comply at all. He kind of saw the evils of it and was just not about it. And they, of course, in typical Scientology fashion, sort of decided to try and destroy his life. And so now, because of this argument, it is sort of, like you said, a ghost town and very empty. What did you think about the whole aquarium situation?
I mean, he offered it to the city. The city had agreed on a deal for $4 million, and then David Miscavige comes in and goes, I'll give you $10 million. So to that gentleman for not selling that for $14 million, you know, because they $10 million more than the original bid. So, I mean, I get it. You really must love your town. If you say, no, I see what you're doing, keep your little funky $14 million, I'm going to give it to the city. But then for the city to really, or for the Church of Scientology to stand their ground and say, okay, well, now your town is a ghost town, which is not, you know, they said during the episode that the Church of Scientology in Clearwater at that time, and this is the late 70s, they were bringing in $1 million a day back then. How? And that's one of the things that I, you know, and I know a lot of it is, you know, it's the whole giving thing or whatever, but I need somebody to really, and that's what I'm hoping we get into at some point in this show. How are you $1 million a day in the late 70s, early 80s? How is that even a possibility in a ghost town?
Yeah. And the fact that they will not sort of, you know, fix up these places if they don't get their way just shows how little they actually care about this community. They care about themselves and they care about power. They don't care how it affects everyone else. And that's sort of the, like, guidelines of what they say that they're all about. That's their motto, is trying to change the world for everyone. And if you're going to be that petty about it, like, of course you're not actually doing what you're saying that you're doing.
Right. I was surprised that they lied. That they came in as the Christian, the non-denominational Christians of Florida.
Yeah, United Churches of Florida.
Yeah. I thought that was, you know, an interesting thing. Because theoretically, if you come in as the Church of Scientology, especially back then, nobody knew what you, no one had a clue what the Church of Scientology is. So if you come in as the Church of Scientology back then, and then you start doing all the things that you claim to do, if you start building daycares, you know, where moms don't have to pay so much, you know, things of that nature, you really start doing this forward thinking, this social economical forward thinking in the community, you could almost be a Satan worshiper at this point. You know what I mean? Because the town is clearly bankrupt. But if you are providing a need to the town, people would not question you. But instead, you almost literally destroy the town.
Yeah, it's because I think that they never had any intention of actually doing what they said that they were going to do. They wanted a place where they could go and gain all of this power and all of this money sort of quietly and in a place that was really convenient.
Did you find it weird that they bought up all this property? They even bought up vacant lots specifically. You know what that is. That's specifically to make sure no one can build on those lots. But did you find it weird that they did all of that and you don't see, like, a plethora of Scientologists walking around? Like, at least if I saw a lot of Scientologists walking around, it would kind of make sense. Like, okay, this is literally, like they said, we're trying to make it a Salt Lake City of Scientology, where if you go to Salt Lake City, there's people everywhere. So if there were Scientologists everywhere, I'd kind of be like, oh, okay, it sucks, but no, yeah, all these Scientologists have a place to go.
I think that it didn't surprise me just because we did see the episode on, like, the ideal orgs.
Right.
And it's the same thing every time, just in a different sort of, you know, way that they present it. It's like they have these big buildings and this, you know, big plot of land and this big area or whatever. But, like, no one's there to actually use it. And that's literally every single place that we've sort of investigated here is the same way. And it's crazy. I do want to talk about someone else who was really pivotal in this episode and whose story I found, you know, one of the most interesting that we've ever seen on the show. And that was the mayor of this town, Gabe Cazares. So he was immediately pretty suspicious. And
yeah, because they had guns on the roof of the hotel.
Yeah, but I thought that was, I don't know. I just thought that he was so, like, passionate about finding out the truth and kind of fighting against his town being taken over. Like, I thought he was just so admirable and so interesting to learn about because, like you said, this was in the 70s. Like, I don't, you know a whole lot of the specifics, but I don't think that people did know a whole lot about Scientology at this point. And the fact that he had this off gut feeling and just really sort of ran with it and was like, no, I'm not having my town being taken over here, was really just, I guess, interesting to learn about. What did you think of his whole involvement?
I mean, I thought it was very admirable, like you said. And I love how he was like, they are the press conference where they showed him, he was just so, they're lying. They came in here and lied to everybody. And that, again, I think that is always going to be your foundation, that you lied first. If you go in and tell the truth and embrace the baby, you know, like the politicians always kiss the baby. They do that so they look, you know, like they're a likable person. But you didn't do that. You went in there and lied and put people with guns on the roof of the hotel. Who's buying this? No one's going to buy that. And as the mayor, you know, and that's the one thing that I did really love, because I don't think we see enough involvement nowadays, is my own little soapbox, but from local government, you know, because local government kind of just defaults to whatever the federal government is doing. So I was really proud to know that there was a time where local government officials really took pride in their town. And it really was unfortunate to know that ultimately destroyed his whole entire career. And I was disappointed because they didn't really say, they might get into it next week, but I was disappointed that we didn't really know kind of what has become of him since then.
Yeah, I agree. I was curious about that too. And I found it interesting how he utilized the media. But before we kind of get into the media and legal aspect of it, how about you tell our viewers about some fun media we do here at AfterBuzz TV?
Yes, guys. Every single week we are here for you. Before our next topic, I just wanted to let you know and say thank you for making us the ESPN of TV Talk. For us to continue to grow, though, we do need your help. So if you're on YouTube right now, which some of you are, hit that thumbs up and subscribe. If you're on iTunes right now, which some of you are, make sure you give us a 5-star rating. But no matter where you are, leave us a comment so you can get involved in the conversation. If you're on the live chat right now, that means right now. Being a part of AfterBuzz has meant so much to all of us, and we truly appreciate you supporting us and doing what we love ever so much. And don't forget to tell your friends, to tell their friends, to tell their friends, and keep enjoying the shows here on AfterBuzz. We love you guys so much.
Yes, recruit them to AfterBuzz, yes. But not Scientology. That's your new
We're
motto.
Not a cult.
No, we're just a fun media network.
Yes, we are.
Yes, thank you guys so much. Love reading all of your comments. Mm-hmm. I check on them religiously, yes. And it's so fun to hear your guys' thoughts, because there's so much to talk about here and so many different perspectives and new information, because it's
all the
just
time.
An endless supply of new news and just these crazy specifics that you can get into. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's talk about sort of the media and then sort of how we got into the big legal thing that happened, because there was a whole big thing that we hadn't really heard of before mm-hmm. this. But again, Gabe Cazares, went on 60 Minutes, and that was one of the first takedown, so to speak, and interviews speaking out against Scientology. And that's like pretty national coverage, but it sort of trickled off after that because, of course, the Scientologists decided that they were going to essentially destroy Cazares' life. And this was maybe the craziest part of the episode for me, and that's really saying a lot. But the sort of secret plans they had to take him down were crazy, and they had these wild names. So there was, I'm going to name all of them. Just
yes, because they're awesome.
Project Tacoless was how they were going to lie and essentially cost him his career. Speedy Gonzalez was a political sex scandal they were going to plant. And they detailed what they wanted happened down to the person's t-shirt that they were going to wear for this. What? That was crazy.
I did, and this is just me being weird and funny, the fact that they named the sex scandal Speedy Gonzalez, I found that hilarious.
Nice.
Because that's
I don't think they found it that way, but that is funny now that you say that. Amazing. We had Italian Fog, which was going to prove that he was a bigamist and plant fake documents saying he was married to a woman in Mexico. Like, how do they think of this? Like, this is wild stuff. And then they have Op Keeler, which is how they're going to plan a fake hit and run when he was at a ball in D.C. Like, these are elaborate schemes here. Were you surprised that they were this organized, or were you like, this is pretty far
yeah,
of the
no,
course?
Yeah, I found humor in the names, but no, I found, you know, they definitely, they've been consistent. You know, I think I was surprised to hear that this was, I think in my head, even though we've seen this series from the beginning and we kind of know, somehow I convinced myself, which maybe I understand now what they're doing in the Church of Scientology, but somehow I convinced myself that they evolved to this crazy, that they didn't start out crazy, but I'm wrong.
I actually had the same exact thought as you, to be honest. I was like, it was probably only, you know, since David Miscavige took over, but mm-hmm. that's not true. It has roots far back, and I totally agree with you because I was like, yeah, this probably started, what, 20 years ago?
Right.
No, this was going on since the 70s, which is just...
crazy.
It is crazy, and I'm glad that we were reminded of that in this episode, because I think people do have these false misconceptions. Like, we were kind of ignorant on that part, mm-hmm. and no, like, the whole route is kind of wild. But yeah, and the fact that they have these names, but then they, like, leave documents where the FBI can easily raid it... I don't understand. They're like filing their secret structure. Like, it makes no sense to me.
That's why, you know, even in modern day times, when we see these scandals on television and people go, look at the text messages. Why would you send that in a text? Why would you have anything like that documented? I don't understand that logic.
No, you have these secret names and then you outline exactly what you're going to do and leave them on printed paper filed away.
Exactly. It can't be a secret if it's just, hey, you know, you burn it. Haven't you seen it? You shred the document.
Guys, watch Viola Davis, How to Get Away with Murder. Like, you have not thought this through.
I know Viola wasn't around back then, but they had, like, what was back then? Magnum P.I. or something.
SVU's been on for 40 years.
Right, yeah. You had something to watch.
It's just insane. Like, they're so smart, manipulative in some ways, and then there's some things
dumb.
I'm like, are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Makes no sense. But then they got even crazier, if that's even possible. And so Gabe tried to hire an attorney in order to sue them. And it turns out they planted an attorney so that they would mess up the case and settle for this tiny sum and not change anything. How do you even go about doing that? I hope we get that next week, because, like, that seems so elaborate.
See, but that, you know, I guess this episode specifically, I just kept hearing my mom's voice in my head, because my mom always says, don't trust anybody. And, you know, I can imagine being in the mayor's position at that point, where you probably are just devastated. I mean, because they said that this had, their whole trying to sabotage his life went on for something like 11 years. So before he decides to sue. So I could see just being at that, you know, desperation state. And then somebody says, hey, I'll help you. This is terrible what they're doing to you. And then they kind of empathize with you. And then you feel like, oh, this person gets me. And then he got chump change.
Yeah. Because he threw out the case, essentially.
Yep.
Wow.
Again, genius.
But
now
horrible.
That part is smart, right?
It is. That's,
but if you
that's some SVU stuff
right
there.
But if you text a lawyer and say, hey, you know, go. And then, you know, 20 years later, we find those texts. That's the dumb part.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Don't leave a paper trail. That's
no,
all I'm saying.
It's so inconsistent in
right.
ways. But speaking of sort of the legal system in the government... I have like theories that Scientology has lots and lots of people in their back pocket, and we've kind of seen that with the FBI and the IRS, and I think that that's happened, unfortunately, in Clearwater a lot too, and I think that had roots even back then as well. Like, Hubbard wrote in his documents that he wants to sort of integrate Scientology into the government and be able to control it, which is terrifying because we have separation of church and state and all of those, you know, things that we're supposed to have checks and balances, and he wants to completely sort of, like, forget that
those.
That's a thing. Yeah, completely yeah. bypass those. And so he essentially wrote that he wanted to occupy and take over this city, and he called it Project Normandy. And then something that got the press's attention was they were sort of protesting their treatment, so to speak, and they dressed up as Nazis. What was your reaction to that besides disgust, obviously?
I mean, I had to take a moment. You know, I did. And like, because that's a symbol of such, you know, horrific atrocities, you know, all the worst words you can possibly say about that. And you decide that the treatment that you're getting, because some guy decides to say, hey, this isn't right, there, someone practicing their First Amendment rights and speaking out against you, you decide that is equal to what happened in Nazi Germany. The ego of this church is insane.
It's ironic, too, because mm-hmm. they are the ones who literally outline the fact that they want to take over and sort of overthrow this place.
So Hitler of you.
Exactly. I'm like, this is hilarious because right. you are like doing exactly what you're protesting against. It's crazy, but
maybe they just deep down inside wanted to wear that uniform because that's really who they identified with.
I honestly would not doubt it. They are crazy, but I was surprised that I hadn't heard of this before.
Right,
that would have been a huge scandal, you would think, but they bury stuff, I guess.
Yeah, because that's something that especially now that in this social climate, you would think you'd hear about that over and over. Everybody's digging up tweets and stuff on that people say. Well, how long has Twitter been around? I don't know, but. They dig up old stuff, but we aren't hearing about Nazi Scientology? That's weird.
That's why I love that the show does bring about these mm-hmm. issues. So now everyone's going to be like, oh.
But they'll explain it away.
They'll try. Yeah. With their notes that are like the same note every week. And yeah. it's like, are you even like trying at this point? Or you have like a template that yeah. you're like... We Send. Never did. Okay, sure. I like don't even read them anymore. I'm like, right. You're not going to say anything new that's going to convince me that you're right. not doing these things. But we also, in addition to the mayor, we had one of, I think, the police officers in the town, Ray Emmons, and he decided that he was going to take it upon himself to investigate Scientology. And he eventually got so overwhelmed that he tried to go to the federal government and... They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't help because they didn't want to be harassed themselves and they thought it was going to be too expensive. That's sickening to me. Like
it is, but you know, because when I was watching that, you know, the thing that I'm thinking to myself is, oh no, if that had been me, I'd have been all over that. But I'm saying that is single, no kids, Jackie Ray. If I'm mom, three kids, maybe, you know, my income is the largest income in the house. I've got this entire family to think about. And then, you know, somebody comes to me and I know that you've tried to destroy the mayor. You basically destroyed this town. I don't know. You know what I mean? I'm just being honest. Like, I don't know at that point. I don't know if I'm going to put my livelihood and the livelihood of my family on the line for anything.
Absolutely. I did like what they were saying in this episode, though, that there is strength in numbers. So it's like, if more than these, you know, four people or whatever were to stand up, then you could probably change stuff. But because everyone is so scared to speak out and to stand up for what's right and against this powerful sort of entity, it's so much harder. Because it's like, you know, one person can make a difference to a point, but there's got to be numbers.
And that's the thing I think people miss, because the last article I read, which was earlier this weekend, it said that internationally, so worldwide, that Scientologists, their numbers are under 150,000. You don't even have the numbers to do what you're doing.
They have the money, though.
They do.
That's the crazy mm-hmm. part. One quote that I think relates to that I love from this episode so much that I wrote it down was when they were in the city commission hearings, and I don't know if it was Ray or just one of the other people testifying, but they're like, this is not a big city fighting against a small organization. This is a small city fighting against a worldwide organization, which oftentimes I think we forget mm-hmm. because you do have these ideal orgs with like 10 people going in and out. But they are powerful because they do have the money and they have obviously these connections to be able to hide stuff and pay people off.
Right. And have attorneys that are just hanging out, ready to sabotage your case. It's scary when you think about it.
It is. I found it kind of really upsetting, to be honest, when they were talking about the city commission hearing, because it was the first major watershed moment. And even Mike said, being on the inside, it did make the Scientologists fearful, because this was a big sort of turning point where they tried to take them down. And they almost had them, honestly. They almost did. But then they decided to overreach, and they wanted to pass this ordinance saying that Scientology couldn't be there at all. And that was ruled unconstitutional. And so sort of a lot of the progress they made building up the case was unraveled, unfortunately. And Scientology got to keep their power. I just have to think about how it might have been different had this turned out differently.
I mean, from a legal standpoint, it was the right call. I mean, you can't just tell people, I mean, we can't kick the Klan out of anywhere. So, you know, and we should. But, you know, you from a legal standpoint, it was the right call. You can't just tell them, because they bought all the property legally. It wasn't like they did. They lied about their religious, you know, background. But everything was on the up and up as far as how they bought these buildings and whatnot. So it was the right call. I get the city, though. I get the city saying, you know, get out of our town. This is ridiculous. So I understand both sides of it, you know, but I do wonder as well, like, what it would be like. Because then Scientology has to take this step back. They have to say, maybe we can't just run around here and do whatever we want to do.
Or set the precedent, if you can't do it here, if they try to move to another city, that other city will kind of take caution and be like, well, look what happened in Clearwater.
Right.
They have all these charges against them. We don't want them here. And so maybe they wouldn't be able to find a place to land, because everyone needs, you know, headquarters and a place to operate. So, you know, maybe that could have made a difference that way.
But, you know, again, it's if they had done it the right way. No one's trying to kick the Church of Latter-day Saints out of Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
No one's trying to do that, because the town is a beautiful, it's beautiful there, you know, and everyone can come and go as they please. You know, no one's getting hazed because they say anything bad about Mormons. It's not happening. And so when you take this kind of stance, you automatically become this sort of enemy of everyone around, except for people in the church.
Yeah. I think that's why it's so important that they're focusing on these sort of foundations this season, because they are doing sort of the investigation into the financials. And I think that's going to be a huge key in bringing it down, because you're right. There are certain laws in place, as kind of irritating as it is in ways, because this is obviously not a good organization, but there are these protections. And so kind of doing it, like you said, the right way, and auditing them for things that they are, you know, rules they are breaking, especially when it comes to finances and, you know, tax exempt status and things like that. I think that is going to be at least, you know, the first kind of place where it starts to crumble.
Yeah. And it's weird that they haven't been able to snatch their tax exempt status, because you know, there's several things on that list that you have to be in order to be a church. And I don't think, I mean, outside of praying to L. Ron Hubbard, which I'm assuming that's who they pray to, they don't really have much else on that list. So I don't know how they're still getting that tax exempt status.
I think in a way, at least where, from my perspective, since they can do these intimidation tactics, like with the FBI and like with the federal government, and we saw it a little bit in the first couple episodes of this season, but it's just the intimidation tactics. Like, the IRS doesn't want them coming after their family either, you know what I mean? So it's just, it's all intimidation, and right, it's all fear-based, which is horrible, but strength in numbers, guys.
Yeah,
we gotta keep fighting.
We do.
I do want to briefly touch on the last person they interviewed in this episode, which was Betsy Stegg, who is one of Mike's friends, and he actually had his wedding at her house. And just because she let him have the wedding there, they sent someone to say that he was with the city and he was trimming down the hedges because he was with the city. It was not someone from the city. It was one of the Scientology neighbors who was sent there to sort of spy on her. And she also had trouble getting the federal government, or even getting, you know, the local government at this point to help her, you know, have legal action against him. Which, especially when the local government won't even help, that's really scary, because that means you can't depend on, like, anyone to help you if something crazy like this happens. What did you think of Betsy's whole situation?
I thought it was interesting, you know, before they started, you know, trying to chop down the hedges, which is definitely so Hatfield and McCoy. It's like, you know, listen, we're going to chop down your hedges. But before that happened, Peter Mansell came to her house. This is a gated community where you shouldn't be able to get in anyway. And he just, you know, lackadaisical, walked up to her house, knocked on the door and said, hey, by the way, we're going to destroy your entire life. I mean, again, why would you say that? Why wouldn't you just do it? Why would you give her a warning?
Okay, according to the documents, they never said that.
Right. But we know you did.
Okay.
And it's like, okay, I'm not going to, you know, if I'm plotting against you, I'm not going to go, hey, Taylor.
This not is- show up at your house in a gated community with surveillance cameras and guards.
It's just, and then, you know, by the way, now that I'm trying to destroy your life, we need these hedges down so I can see you better. Yeah. Like, that's just the dumbest. It doesn't make any sense. But I think the one thing that surprised me about this whole thing, and I get it. Don't get me wrong. I get it. It's your town. It's important to you. It's your home. I'm not saying run, but I would have been out. Because you're just not, you're destroying the lives here. And for her to know that this is happening to her, for her to go to local police and local police goes, oh God, please don't do this. Please, they asked her not to do it. And she's still staying there and she's still fighting. That is persevering, because I wouldn't do it. I'd be on the first thing moving out of Clearwater.
Yeah, and the fact that she went and appeared on the show, mm-hmm. like anyone who appears on the show is so brave to me, because they see it right away and they send the notes and they have their ways to try to get back at you, and it's awful. And one of the ways they're trying to get back at Betsy that I found like not funny, but like
kind of
yeah, having the neighbor across the street constantly complain about stuff she's doing. I'm like, how petty is that?
I mean, I kind of want to be that person when I get old, though. Like, what are you doing over there? You know, I'm not even going to kid about that. I kind of am looking forward to saying, get off my lawn.
It's so ridiculous, though. Like, they're just stooping to these high school levels. It's just absurd. Before we get into our special segments and news and things like that, I did like that there was some hope. It wasn't just at the end of the episode, but I just really, really liked this quote. And you know this because I told you when you watched it. But Leah was like, I feel like this is a movie and the villain is always winning. And Mike said, the villain isn't going to win forever. Yes. And I think that just summarizes this whole show.
Yep. I mean, the apocalypse might happen first, but...
but we will.
But it'll end.
Yeah. And they're trying, you know, everything in their power to get it to end, which is just so admirable. Yeah. But I just really, really, really liked that line.
Keeping hope alive, you guys.
It's absolutely.
Very important. Well,
let's get into our special segment, shall we?
Let's do it.
So every week, obviously, we highlight a different celebrity who either is involved in Scientology or has been involved in Scientology. This week is Beck, who is a Grammy-winning singer and musician. He's known for songs like Where's It At, Devil's Haircut, and The New Pollution.
Are you going to sing some of these so
I'm
can
not.
Be...
I'm actually not going to do that. But it's interesting because Beck is actually self-identified as both a Jewish and Scientologist, which I'm not sure that we've ever... looked at a case like that before. He's been involved in Scientology most of his life, and his wife is also a second generation Scientologist, so it runs kind of deep both in his family and his wife's family. He's publicly acknowledged his affiliation with Scientology multiple times, the first time being back in 2005 with an interview with the New York Times, which is interesting.
I wonder if it's like Kabbalah, because, you know, Kabbalah is, in my opinion, the Jewish version of Scientology. I don't know if you know anything
about
Kabbalah.
I'm not familiar with that.
I worked at the Kabbalah Center for 2 years, and it's very much weird. It's definitely not Scientology weird. It's definitely more, you know, but it's weird. It's not, they're not going to stalk you. I'm safe saying they're weird in public and not having to worry about somebody knocking on my door saying, I'm going to destroy you. So, but it's definitely kind of got that.
Like alternative type of
stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to look into that more. Yeah. But so many celebrities. Guys, that's kind of a
but that's,
main
I mean,
point
that's
of
their,
them.
Yeah, that's their niche that's, market.
It's their way of recruiting, mm-hmm. along with their beautiful ideal orgs that houses absolutely no one. Let's move into some news.
Yes.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Okay, so for you guys who are really into Scientology, this might be old news for you. It's new news for me. But on DirecTV, channel 320, there is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-days-a-week Scientology channel. Did you know this?
I did, because there's billboards here in Los Angeles.
I'm on the road. I am focused on...
No, I take Uber, so I don't have a car here. But it's really interesting because it's the tagline is like... the only thing more interesting than what you have heard is what you haven't, or something like that, something along those lines.
Yes. And so some of their, you know, they have these little that says starts tonight. You know,
what starts tonight?
Yeah, and that's the thing. This is why I picked this picture, because it's like new fall season starts tonight, and it's
fall
usually,
season of what
exactly.
I wonder I wonder if they have like scripted fictional programs, or it's all.
I don't know, but the one thing that we do know about Scientology is they have amazing productions. Say what you want about them, but if you've ever seen a video production produced by the Church of Scientology, it is amazing. You can get it. You can see this on DirecTV. You can download it in the App Store or Google Play. This is some of their, look, the Big Bane. What is this? Like, this is some of their programming.
Yeah, we're listening for people listening on audio. Everybody loves L. Ron, the Big Bang.
My favorite is Battlefield Earth. Like, I really want to log on and watch Battlefield Earth.
Christy Alley McBeal. Oh my gosh, Big, Big Lies. So they're playing off of
things that you actually know.
What?
So here's the other thing. Here's the caveat for me.
Is that not a fake slide?
That is from Scientology.tv. That's where I got that from. What? This is their real programming. So, the thing that got me about this is, again, and I know I've asked this earlier in the show, like, where are they getting their money from? I'm not entirely sure about that, but I know where some of it's going, because they are paying $4 million a year for this to air on DirecTV.
$4 million a year. Crazy. Seeing the names of those kind of blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to research clips and stuff of these, because I want to know if it's scripted. I want to know if it's an interview. I'm very curious.
See, so
now.
Maybe since I can't get you to go to a Scientology center,
I'll watch
I can
it
get
for
you to
research
watch
purposes.
There
that's
we go.
Really crazy.
There
wow.
It is.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That's
you're welcome.
Like I said, that kind of blew my mind. So we don't have predictions because this is a documentary series, but we did get a nice little promo at the end of this episode, like a 45-second promo, and so we are going to have a part two of the Clearwater sort of special series that we started this week, and I am so, so excited because we learned so much interesting and terrifying stuff this week, and I can't wait for next week.
I did have a thought, and you tell me what you think.
Okay.
This is my days working in property management. I don't understand why somebody from the town doesn't squat, because if you're a squatter, they still have to go through the eviction process. Make them spend their money getting you out of their property. The whole city should just go squat.
Wow, that's actually, that's
just
kind of
an idea.
Jackie, you're going to take down this.
I'm going to Olivia Pope this whole situation.
Well, thank you for that very interesting piece of information. Guys, thank you guys so much for joining us. Always such an interesting time on this show.
Times.
Where can everyone find you and talk more about this stuff and talk about what we might see next week?
Yes, you guys, you can follow me on all things social media at JRayTheFanatic. Make sure you follow me on Instagram because I do talk about Scientology a lot. I also talk about the new show on Fox Passage, and I'm here on Thursdays doing Supernatural.
Awesome. You guys can find me on Twitter @Elphaba_ and Instagram @Taylor_Gates_. I also host Good Trouble, which airs on Freeform every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Find me there, find me here, find me everywhere.
She's so busy.
Yeah, so busy. We will see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.